time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 16th of August 2014. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 16th of August, Sharon Brown talked to Kim Wesney from the Waiheke Community Gallery and the organiser of his march against Israeli incursions into Gaza, Hone Fowler.
Great, so we've got Kim, who we're very lucky to have from the art gallery today because she's just come back from overseas and is here to share lots of exciting things that are happening at the gallery. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Oh, hang on, I'll just switch you on. There you go.
Is it working now?
Yeah.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know what time of day it is.
Oh, right. Daylight, 9 o'clock, back on Waiheke. This isn't a dream.
I'm getting over it. Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better than I did a couple of days ago. Yeah, so at the gallery, I've come back to the gallery looking very interesting. We're actually closed until the 22nd of August. The floor's being redone and the walls are all being refurbed. It needs a bit of a makeover. So that's at the moment, that's what's happening at the gallery. But it will be open by next week. And in time for the opening on Friday the 29th of August, which is three wonderful new shows. The main one. Oh, it's gone off.
No, it's just I've put it down because it's buzzing.
Oh, okay.
Is it buzzing in your ears?
No.
Okay, right, okay, I'll put it back up again then. Yeah, it's all right. Sorry, everyone.
So we've got a travelling exhibition coming up for the National Portrait Gallery, and it's the only place in Auckland that this is going to be exhibited. So it's an exhibition called All Woman, and it's a modern portrait of New Zealand women by Bev Short, and 48 images of inspiring New Zealand women. We're really lucky, and we're really looking forward to seeing that, to being able and proud to be able to exhibit that up here. So at the same time, and that's in the main gallery. In the small gallery, there's a response to that exhibition by the Waiheke Photographers Collective, curated by Linda Young, and this is Waiheke Women Living, working and playing all over the island.
Oh, wow.
So that's, yeah, really, really excited about that. And then the annex, there's Essence, objects by New Zealand women artists. So that will be a mixture. There's an image here on the newsletter that'll be out next week. Marilyn Wiseman, a ceramic by Marilyn Wiseman, among other pieces as well. So, yes, so that's what's happening there. And, opening next next Friday. Friday the 29th. What is the date today? I don't know. I've lost a couple of days.
It must be the 16th, just going for this Gulf News, but maybe it's, I don't know if this is even this week's Gulf News. Oh, look, the internet. It's the 16th.
Thank you. I know, it's Saturday. Yeah. So I'm at work today processing a lot of the Walking Hall Waiheke Art Award submissions. We've had a great response on it with the new website, so that's another just plug for people to have a look at our new website.
Okay, Waiheke Art Gallery?
Yep, Waiheke Community Art Gallery.
Great, and you're on Facebook as well, aren't you?
Yeah, on Facebook as well. So yes, that'll be good. That's coming up later on.
So can you explain that process, or where we're at in that process
for the website,
for the art awards?
Oh, for the art awards. So the submissions closed last night. There's some few coming in today, but it's an online submission process. So we've had a really good response from all over New Zealand. I think we'll probably get to about I think there were 90 as of yesterday afternoon. So this year the award is later on in October. In fact, the award ceremony is on the 25th of October. It's usually around Labor weekend, and the show's about that time as well. It opens on the 25th of October. The selector this year is Ian Jervis from town. I'm just reading this. Where is it? Yeah, so it'll be another really interesting show.
So what are the what were the requirements to?
The criteria is it's a national award show in two dimensions, for two dimensional pieces, with the biggest being 1,200 mils, like 1.2 metres. So the selector selects the finalist show, which is usually, in the past, it's been about 26 to 30 pieces.
Oh, right.
And then out of that, we have the the Premier winner, and then there's two. There's Michael Evans Award for Figurative Work, and there's some Douglas Merritt Award as well.
Mm. And is there a theme that goes with it?
No,
or it's just
no.
Whatever you feel.
Whatever.
Is there a, it has to have been made in the last X amount of time?
Yeah, or? Not exhibited.
Okay, not exhibited.
So it's okay. New. It's all new work.
And
the finalists, that's always a very interesting show, and then the selectors' rationale and process. They usually talk about that at the ceremony.
So, many selectors are there? There's one.
Just the one, and it's different each time.
And then, who chooses the final?
He does.
So he chooses the curated selection or whatever you call it, and then he also chooses the final piece.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
That's good. So it's been running for quite a few years now, and thank you, with Wilkrun Hall being the main sponsor for that.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's become a real, it's national. Mm. So we're getting submissions from all over the country now.
Mm. And also a good excuse to come and visit Waiheke that weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So, ongoing with that, the other events that are, sorry, excuse me, but...
it's all good.
Other events that are happening at the gallery. On the 5th of October, Sunday, the 5th of October at 4:30, there's an exhibition. There's a performance of Gloria's Handbag, which is a modern magical mystery with music from the Magic Flute. And this is a performance by award-winning actor Helen Mulder. So this is a ticketed event, $35, and that'll be fantastic too. It's imperative to have a good handbag when you're on the way out, presented by award-winning actor Helen Mulder. So that looks interesting. Actually, I need to find out a little bit more about it.
What day is that?
That is on Sunday, the 5th of October.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In fact, I found a wee bit of notes about it here. Here we go.
That sounds like fun.
It does. No, there's not. Oh, yes. Coming up, we have two special events. Helen Mulder's new play, Gloria's Handbag, has been receiving rave reviews. Here's a little bit about Gloria. Gloria is 97 and facing a move to Retireville in Thingamies. On a whim, she buys an extraordinary design handbag. The purchase sets off a series of unusual events which transforms Gloria's remaining days and enables her to send a message to the future. Give your own design handbag and outing to the special event. Oh, that sounds interesting.
I'd love to see all the designer handbags, all the handbags that end up at this show. Yeah. Oh, lovely.
Good-o.
Oh, well, that sounds like fun. And of course, Ladies for Hire is on tonight, a play at the Artworks Theatre. And I think it's showing again tomorrow lunchtime. So there's a bit of theatre fare, which is always a nice wintry thing to do, go to the theatre. And, lovely. Good. And I suppose you won't have seen the library, the new library or the
Po
or anything like that. No. So you'll have to go and have a look.
Yeah, when I finish today, I'm going to go and have a good look. It looks amazing. Looks beautiful.
It does look lovely. And, my reflection was just that, we don't have architecturally designed public buildings on Waiheke. I mean, the Marae is lovely and has a certain personality and has got artwork in it. But aside from that, our public buildings aren't that interesting. And so it's just lovely to have a beautiful building. And then, of course, the Po Project, some lovely public art that's been made by the community and led by Chris.
Yeah.
It's just magic.
It's beautiful. Mm. And the whole space around the library, and it'll be very much looking forward to having an explore today.
Mm. And I'm quite interested. I was just talking to the Humble Pie Butchery, and they were saying that they're just noticing more sort of flow up at the top of the road because of the library. So it also seems to be attracting more visitors through that area in a way that maybe people were just maybe just walking down the road or just not necessarily even noticing that space and trying to get to the village.
Yeah.
So it's quite exciting. It'll be interesting to know how the gallery feels like. Is it adding? Does it seem to be bringing more people? And it's early days now. Or
well, certainly
is it opening up that precinct. Or
I hope so.
Yeah.
We hope. Well, it'll certainly be an improvement on bringing people up from being working
through
the building site through the last few years. So it's very exciting, and just it's lovely looking down from. I've seen. got some photos at home of various stages of it.
Oh, wow. That would be a great exhibition,
I've got together them all. They're done on various, just on the phone and my old phone and things like that, so they're various quality.
Interesting, because there'll be some, pictures from the day as well show how that's all evolved. That sounds like a good project.
Fish them all out.
I mean, you almost feel like there should have been like a frame, an empty frame around that. This is art, as they were on the building site. Draw people's attention to the fact that something was going on here.
What was interesting was just like seeing the changes, having been up at the gallery, because it would just have a look out the window.
Of course,
sometimes I'm almost like in the window, and I remember one day just looking out, and of course everyone was busy, and then the site closed down, and then another time looking out the window and thinking something's really different, and of course that big Norfolk pine was there in my photos for so long, and then it was gone.
Wow.
One day, and I thought, what's missing? Oh, that tree. And of course it's changed over. The little tree's still there, that's always been there in the centre of the courtyard. Well, now it's not the centre of the courtyard anymore. It's a different. So the space has changed and morphed. And
That could be quite interesting on a project to just, like a time lapse project.
Yeah.
To just see it. Changing. And
I'll get the. I don't know where they all are, but I'll gather them all together.
Sounds like a great project.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, how we don't notice things until. Until they're gone. you probably never really, particularly noticed that Norfolk pine. And then suddenly when it's gone, you're like, wasn't there something else here? Oh, yeah, pine.
Yeah. Interesting.
Anyway. Great. Well, thank you so much. So a few things coming up at the gallery.
Yep.
And sounds exciting.
G'day. Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome. I'm probably going to get another strong coffee, I think.
Yeah, keep going through the day. I always find that jet lag thing hits me more coming this way than the other way.
Yeah, we were flying.
It just takes me forever to just get back into the rhythm. But at the same time, I appreciate seeing different times of day. I mean, I know people get really annoyed that they're waking up in the middle of the night, but I actually think it's quite nice. I get to see what it's like to be awake at a different time of day that I don't know.
And the light, when we got up to England, I woke up in the morning, it was 6 o'clock. I thought, because I get up early, usually in the morning, about 6 o'clock or 5:45, see the dawn, and woke up, boing, in the middle of London, in this wonderful hotel that's got beehives on the roof.
Oh, my goodness.
So I wanted to stay there, urban beekeeping.
Wow.
Fascinating. And I woke up, let's get up, have a cup of coffee, let's get out there, because it felt really good. And I looked at the clock, it was 20 minutes past 4 in the morning.
Wow.
Because they're so much further up north in the middle of the summer. I've never been to see family in the up there in the summer. Never been. It was lovely and warm. It's cold back here. But it's wonderful to be home. But yeah, so it was light at 4:20 in the morning, and still light at night about 10:30. So I had to draw the curtains.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So can you share something about this beekeeping hotel? Is that quite unusual, or are all the hotels setting up with bees on the roof?
Well, bees are so important, as we all know. And because the cities are so big, I think there's a bit of it in New York as well, and some other urban settings for beekeeping. And this hotel is quite well known for it. So I got in touch with them beforehand and got a room looking, most of that side of the hotel looks over the canopy where the beehives are, and they're quite well known for it. So I didn't get to see the bees up close, but we looking down, and it's next to Hyde Park.
Oh, right. Because so, I was thinking, what are they doing? Going through rubbish bins, or
there's a lot of flowers in England.
Well, there are in the summer, because they're all those pubs have all those lovely hanging baskets.
And of course the bees just head off to the Hyde Park, which is this is quite big, and come back. And I think there was a bee show coming up, but of course we were only there for a day, and it's good.
Oh, sounds tremendous. Did you notice other things around? I mean, it's kind of off the top of your head, so I don't want to sort of put you on the spot, but did you notice other things around design or art in London that caught your eye?
We were there for just a day, and we caught up with some friends and went to see the summer exhibition at the Royal Academy. So that's a big group, celebration. Exhibition, so that was fantastic. I hadn't been to that before, so that was a lot of input, and it was good to have these friends, Susie and Christine, to talk to us about that, because they'd been going to that they'd worked there in the past, so that was good. And I brought back I had a look at a lot of art up in Norfolk, and a lot of landscapes and community type exhibitions and little galleries and things like that. Right. When we were there.
Was there a lot going on?
Yeah. There's a lot of artists up there. A lot of, and I went to the Sainsbury Centre, which has got a big collection of artwork there, and an exhibition by John Virtue, which he spent many hours walking from one particular point on the coast to the another one along the coast that we went up to. See a lot of birds actually, and a lot of honey up there as well, beekeeping. And so that was very good. Yeah, I tried to see as much as I could in the time that I was there.
Is there a lot of variety in the bird life? I'm just asking because when I was in France, there really aren't that many birds in the, you know, even in an area that's quite sort of rural, there didn't seem to be an awful lot of birds in the woods.
We saw a lot of birds, and also north coast, there are a lot of seabirds and coastal birds and migrating birds, so that was the other reason I wanted to go up there. My dear old aunt, she'd run into birds, and so it was lovely to share that. And these marshes, the Clyde marshes, and up on that north coast, there's a big movement for bird ornithology and bird watching, and but of course last year they had these big huge tidal surges as well, and that was interesting to see. There's a big margin of marshland between the North Sea and the villages that they're there. And in actual fact, just after we left, they had another higher king tide type of thing. And where we were just walking along there, but I saw a photograph of someone canoeing along on their kayak. So it's still happening, and it's happened in the past as well. So it's very interesting. But the birds, of course, come through in groups, the types of birds that are migrating. Mm. And there is resident population of other types of seabirds there too. So we saw
a lot of birds. Yeah. Oh, that must have been fascinating to see some different kinds of birds.
Yeah, and there's a wonderful building that's being extended at the moment, just out of Clye and Blakeney, and Norfolk Wildlife Trust have got that. So there's this gorgeous low building with a turf roof, and watching stations and little stations out in the marshes as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So it's really well set up for people to go and have a look.
Yeah.
And, and did you feel that worked well, that kind of interaction with the, I mean, you know, watching the birds but not disturbing their habitat?
Yeah.
Because we have that issue here with, you know, there are dotterels that are on the beach, and the best protection is that we don't go too close to them.
It's a big, you can buy any sort of binoculars or a monocular that you like, so you stand way, way back, and you see them through the...
So you don't actually get close, but there are viewing platforms quite far away that allow you to see.
And you wouldn't want to get close anyway, because this is a big marsh.
Yeah.
So it's very wild, and there are walking paths, so you stay right away from them, but you can, take your binoculars out and your sandwiches and a cup of tea.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, well, it wouldn't be England if you didn't have your cup of tea with you. Yeah. Oh, so where is this all happening? Whereabouts?
North Norfolk coast.
Okay.
So East Anglia, up the top there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you have quite good weather? Because that is the best weather in England is in that area.
25 to 28 degrees every day.
Oh, wow.
So yesterday I had about 4 layers of merino on in the gallery. I'm still cold.
And were there places you could swim in the sea, or you wouldn't have wanted to?
I think people do, but if it's really calm. Mm. But it shoals away quite quickly.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but I think most of the swimming...
So it's a bit like Christchurch. I mean, Christchurch, you've got your really, really short season because it's so freezing, and the water must be very cold there as well.
I don't really know about the swimming there.
Mm. Yeah, just curious.
Lots of boating.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Good. Well, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah. I'd lovely to see family because that's good.
Well, I went to France, and what really struck me there was just the art and design stuff. Mm. Mm. So public things like the lampposts, the parks, they'd all been, instead of just being like a couple of park benches and somewhere where you walk the dog, they'd kind of been transformed.
All right.
So where I was in Nice, it used to be the case that everyone would walk up and down the Promenade des Anglais because it's so famous in the Riviera and blah blah blah, but now they've actually done it for, you know, they've set it up for cycling, rollerblading, walking.
Right.
And then they've got other parts of the city they've just opened up. So instead of just having the visitors in one place and the locals just going off to the mountains, the whole city seemed to come out and be enjoying the space. It was just really interesting to see what different places do.
Yeah.
And I love that thought of art in public places, not just a sculpture, but just being able to integrate it in the kinds of things that you have.
Certainly, at that time, there was a project called Clive 14.
Oh, what's that?
That was a lot of public installation around the area. So you would get a form showing you where the public works were. But there was a wide range. It wasn't just sculpture. There were activities, there were interactivities and workshops that resulted in an installation of sorts. And that was happening, I think it's still happening, but I got to see a couple of the pieces that were around where we were.
Wow.
But it was quite over quite an extensive area.
Mm.
So that was good. I brought quite a bit of literature back home. And
that's interesting. So we might see some things through the art gallery of
maybe like,
yeah, because that's quite interesting, isn't it, that notion of interactivity and public space and then being able to display your work immediately.
And of course we saw things at the beginning of the Poppies for a lot of preparation for the World War One memorial exhibitions all through England, as that's starting to happen here as well. So we saw the beginning of the poppies, the ceramic poppies around the Tower of London.
Oh, okay.
So we saw the beginning of the installation of that coming out of the window, and of course that's ongoing until the Mr. Stayer. Then and that was very moving. So there's a lot of that. There was a lot of that starting over there as well. Yeah, so I think that was a major focus for
because I think their major celebrations are, or the kind of commemoration of the start is happening this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas for us, I think it's more Anzac Day next year. That seems to be starting how it's working out. Lovely. Thank you so much for sharing all of that.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. Thank you.
Great. So have a lovely week, is there an opening for the exhibition?
The exhibition's all women. The National Portrait exhibition all these three shows are opening on Friday the 29th at 6 p.m. Everyone welcome.
Great. Good. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Lovely. A bit more.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Right. Okay, well, we're going to be trying something a little bit different, which is I'm going to try and call Hone, who's the organiser of the Rally for Palestine and is involved with Cura Gaza, which was the container ship of things that went out to help stop the blockade in Gaza. So I'm just going to call him now and see if we can talk to him.
G'day.
Kia ora. Hone, is that you?
Kia ora, yes.
Yes? Okay, can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, okay, so I've got you live on air and I'm hoping that people can actually hear that. So tell us about this rally that's going on today.
Yeah, great. There's a Freedom for Palestine rally throughout Aotearoa today. We've got over 8 centres participating in action today, and that might be from holding vigils to sending messages to Gaza to protests to rallies to marches, and it's all the way from Northland, down to Otago, Whangarei, Auckland, Hamilton, Hawke's Bay, Wellington, Christchurch, Nelson, Dunedin. So there's literally going to be thousands of people on the streets today saying that or opposing Israel's aggression in recent weeks against the people of Gaza, primarily. That's what's happening today, and the one local to us is happening in Altair Square at 2 p.m. this afternoon, and it's a rally with a few good speakers and a few songs in Altair Square, and then a march down Queen Street.
Lovely. And have you got some details of some of those speakers?
No, you have to come and find out for yourself.
Ah, okay, sounds great.
There's quite a good range of speakers from different leaders in different parts of communities throughout Auckland, politicians as well as community leaders from a range of faiths and ethnicities to really represent the broad and diverse support that this movement has.
And so I guess one of my questions is why should we care particularly about Gaza? You know, there are lots of places in the world where terrible things happen, and there isn't as much media attention as there is on Israel. Is there something different about this particular thing? Or?
Well, each situation is different. As you say, there are a lot of bad things happening in the world, but from my perspective, this is probably the most extreme form of apartheid. Is a word that's been used a lot to describe what's happening in Israel-Palestine. Genocide is another one that has happened to describe, that has been used to describe the killing of almost 2,000 Palestinians in Gaza in the last few weeks. Ethnic cleansing that is going on in the land of Palestine, where their land is continually being taken and is, you know, on a daily basis, and people are being killed and murdered, you know, and that has been going on for the last 66 years, and it must stop. Mm-hmm. Palestine deserve to, you know, Palestinians deserve to grow up and live in a place that's free from these attacks. And yeah, basically, we need to, as people, as individuals, as people in New Zealand, we need to realise that we have our privileges and our freedoms here, and it's our responsibility, our duty as citizens of the world to stand up for human rights elsewhere where they're being denied.
Mm. And how can people be informed? Because there's a lot of, you know, messages, all kinds of different messages. You know, I think is Zionists held a protest earlier this week or last week about and you know, so how can, you know, the New Zealand public that, you know, is a long way away actually be informed on some of the issues that are happening, and then also just kind of find a way through things? Because, you know, people say, oh well, you know, if Hamas weren't firing things off, then Israel wouldn't be doing what they're doing, and they have a right to defend themselves. How, you know, how do people make sense of all of this stuff?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it is a challenge, and it's a challenge that's put out to people that have an interest in human rights and peace, and world peace generally. It's important to do your own research, and a good place to start in local websites like the Palestine Human Rights Campaign website. I think it's palestine.org.nz. There's also kyotogaza.net, which has very up-to-date articles and news from the region, especially in Palestine, and really cutting through a lot of the crap, if you like, that we often get drowned in through Western media, you know, CNNs and Fox Newses and things like that, and BBCs, that really have been, there's a lot of evidence to show that their view is quite biased. So doing your own research, number one, kyotogaza.net is probably the best place to start, in my opinion. And also, really get talking to people, have dialogue, don't be afraid to have conversations with people. A lot of people shy away from the subject due to, you know, perceived lack of knowledge, but it's very important to have these discussions at home, at work, at school, to really get a better understanding of what's going on there.
Mm. So what's the, do we have, I mean, it's a tragic situation. Do we have any, what are the death tolls and the affected numbers tolls? And because when we talk of Gaza, we talk about 1.8 million people stuck in an area that's, you know, what, about a fifth the size of Auckland, getting shelled and bombed. And I heard that there were sort of, I'm surprised there are only 60,000 people that need mental health support, because it seems like a really fraught situation to be stuck in a place that you can't get out of, and to bring up your children in a situation where
you know, there's differing access to water and food, and then you're getting shelled, and then people, I think everyone's affected by someone close to them who's died.
Absolutely, yeah. It's quite unimaginable what the situation would be, especially for the younger children in Gaza growing up. I mean, you know, for every seven-year-old in Gaza has lived through three assaults on their homeland. And, you know, for a seven-year-old living through those times, you know, you can only imagine what damage that would do to them, you know, personally, their, you know, what their view in the world might be like. I think, yeah, 60,000 people have been displaced. They cannot go home. Every single person in Gaza is affected directly or has a family member that has been killed or knows someone that has been killed, family members. As I said, almost 2,000 people, and a third of those people have been children that have been killed over the last few weeks in Gaza. There is nowhere to go. As you say, it's a tiny bit of land, roughly about 45 kilometres long and about 8 kilometres wide, with an 8-metre concrete wall on one side that, if you go within 300 metres close to, you can get shot at by snipers and watchtowers. And if you're a fisherman and it's on the coast, you can't go out more than 3 nautical miles to fish. And it's, you know, Gaza has a very rich and long history of being a fishing village or city, but the fishermen aren't allowed to fish. The infrastructure is bombed. All the raw sewage is flushing into the sea because it's been bombed in recent attacks just over the last couple of weeks. So if you can imagine all this polluted water, you know, where people swim, catch their fish, there's really nowhere to go for people that are in desperate need of medical attention. There's all these restrictions that stop people from really having any freedom, freedom of movement, freedom of access to clean and fresh water. I think over 95% of the water there is undrinkable. The power, the sole power station has been bombed and blown up. So over 18 hours a day, there's no power. So all these things, you know, the education systems, the schools have been bombed. You know, there's a lack of, you can't get cement in to rebuild anything. You can't get simple, you know, food items are banned, like mayonnaise and chocolate and things like that. It's just silly. And this siege that Israel enforces and Egypt is complicit in enforcing needs to end. It's illegal and it must be stopped. And basically, that's why we're mobilizing today throughout the country to say that the siege of Gaza must end now.
Mm. So, so many questions. But what can people do? Because I always think that, you know, political solutions are. I mean, is there some way that the public can suggest a political solution? Or are there things that people can be involved in regardless of what they think about who's responsible and who's at fault and whether it's Hamas and whether it's the Israeli army? Are there ways that people can just reach out across all of that to express a sense of the fact that this is really not a good expression of humanity and to help the people on the ground?
Yeah, well, the first thing is really to get a bit of understanding about the situation, about the occupation of Palestine. So to find out some information about that, and then see, draw the lines about how we as a people are complicit in supporting this, Israel's, the military of Israel, and their actions. So I'm sure people are aware of the direct action that took place yesterday at the Superfund. We have, as a country, our money invested in companies that have direct links to the Israeli military and the making of weapons that supply the army that bomb the children in Gaza, for instance. flyers and postcards that people can fill out today at the rally at 2 p.m. So that's one action that people can take. Another action is really putting the pressure on with a boycott of Israeli goods. Now these are goods made in Israel, like SodaStream, like the Dead Sea creams that recently got kicked out of the Westfield malls and things like that. So really, being smart about what you spend your money on, what you're supporting by doing so, and really making an effort to disinvest and to boycott Israeli-made goods. So I just named a couple of them, and there are more. So come along, so I encourage people to come along today at 2 p.m. to the rally. We've got plenty more information about what we can do here in Aotearoa to support freedom for Palestine, really, and to make an end to this cruel and brutal occupation of Gaza.
Mm. Is there any end in sight? I'm not following the. I find it too disturbing. Is there any end in sight politically, or is there? Do you know anything about this particular situation? How it's arisen, and because it seems to be one of a sort of a recurring nightmare for people living in Gaza, that every couple of years they go in. The Israeli army goes in there on one pretext or another and causes lots of distress for hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's partly due to the pressure from people around the world. Last week, you might have seen reports of up to 200,000 people in Cape Town protesting in support of freedom for Palestine. 60,000 in Chicago, 150,000 in London, all throughout Europe and the Middle East. There are literally millions of people around the world who are mobilizing and getting out on the streets and saying to their leaders, to the leaders of their countries, saying, look, we need to do more. Lots of countries in Latin America have cut diplomatic ties with Israel in an act to pressure them to stop this onslaught and to end the siege of Gaza. There's no reason why we can't do the same here. We're asking the parliament here to close the embassy, to close the Israeli embassy. That will send a clear message to people of Israel to say, hey, look, the people of the world don't support what you're doing. It's wrong. You're killing thousands of innocent civilians, and you must stop now, and this cruel siege must stop. You bring up a good point about the siege and the onslaught, and every couple of years, Israel coming in and under one pretext or another, killing hundreds of innocent civilians. That's going to continue if the siege does not end.
Well, I'd heard two things when I travelled through Dubai recently. There were two things that were signalled in some of the Gulf newspapers. Firstly, that there's a lot of mining opportunity off the coast of Gaza that Israel would like to control but don't fully control at the moment. And secondly, that they're the fifth biggest world's arms supplier, and so conflicts and militarization within the country and the opportunity to demonstrate how these weapons work is actually quite useful in terms of the whole arms sales deal. And I know that's quite cynical, but there's possibly some truth in that. I guess I'd just like to just make another point that I think sometimes people feel, you're against Israelis or Israel. I'm actually half Jewish, and I do believe that the political solution needs to come from Israelis and Jewish people around the world just stepping up and saying this is really not right. And what I'm quite interested in is that the Israeli paper at the moment, Haaretz, is actually coming out and being really, really critical of what the Israeli army and the government are doing. And so I feel that there's a little bit of hope in that. And that debate is starting to open up with Israelis who aren't Zionists or who want to distance themselves from the terrible things that are happening in Gaza. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, you're right. And I totally agree. And we must have overlooked the growing support that Palestine gets from within Israel, from Israelis. There's think it's important that we do this, and now is the time to really make our voices heard. The spotlight is on Gaza once again for horrific acts against the civilian population, and now is the time to really give a good push to break down these walls and to end the siege on Gaza for good, so this thing doesn't keep happening every couple of years where you get thousands of people killed. I read an article a couple of days ago that even if the siege was broken tomorrow, it would still take 10 years to rebuild or to bring Gaza back to how it was 5 weeks ago with all the damage that's happened there. So putting things in perspective, it's really important that people make their voices heard and we get out and today's a good opportunity for it.
Great. So, the rally starts at 2:00. Go and listen to some speakers, meet some other people, and, keep yourself informed, on all the different arguments, and then work out where you stand within all of that, eh?
Where you stand. Absolutely, yeah.
Great.
So, yeah, come on down. Thanks. To Altair Square.
Lovely. Thanks so much. Have a lovely day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Cheers.
Great. So that was Hone, who was part of Kiora Gaza, one of the part of the New Zealand contingent that went to help break the blockade against Gaza a couple of years ago, and he continues to be really active. And what I always find really interesting in that sort of situation is he's not Palestinian, he's not Israeli, he's not Jewish, he doesn't particularly have a connection to that part of the world, but it's something that he feels really strongly about, and is getting stuck in for the things that he believes are right.
You've been listening to the Interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.